The first week of this series, I told you a story about the summer, or one of the summers that I worked at summer camp, and I want to tell you another story. If there's any teachers, which I know there are here today, I know that through the years that you've been teaching, you probably have like a handful of students that stick out in your mind, right? And you say like, man, I remember exactly what they looked like. I remember the clothes they used to wear and this, their attitude. And so I'm not a teacher in that sense, but I worked at that summer camp, and I have campers that stick out in my mind, and I just remember like everything about them. And so I want to tell you a story about probably maybe the most, like, I don't want to say profound camper, but the one that left the most like lasting impact on me. It was this young man, young boy, his name was Ethan, and what you need to know about Ethan was that he wasn't like every other camper. And what I mean by that is, if you guys have ever sent your kids to summer camp, you know that that costs a lot of money. It's a sacrifice that parents make because, you know, it's beneficial. And so you could always see sort of the dichotomy of kids, right? And you could see that there were some kids that, like, their church sponsored them, right? By the way that they dressed and talked and the cars even that their parents dropped them off in, right? And this particular week, we could see that in our cabin, right? Like, there was the parents who dropped their kids off in, like, the Cadillac, and they had, like, Nike everything, right? And there was those kids, and then there was Ethan. And his parents, you know, his parents, they dropped him off in this car that I could not believe was still running. It was very old, and you could see that it had gone through it, right? And Ethan himself, like, his luggage, for example, was like kind of an old backpack and a Walmart bag with his clothes, right? And the shirt he was wearing, I remember all of this, the shirt he was wearing these, like, oversized, like, basketball shorts that came down to, like, here on him, and he was wearing this really worn-out, like, white undershirt. Not the wife beaters, but the ones that, you know, they look like a t-shirt. What was interesting is the, and I'm not saying this is how it is for everyone, so please don't take my words and twist it, but you could see, like, the Cadillac mom was like, all right, kid, like, get out of here, you know, I'll see you next week. But Ethan's mom and Ethan's dad, it's like they couldn't let him go, right? And they just, this was his first time away, you know, and it was this big moment, and I don't know if they had saved for this to let him do this or if a church had sponsored them, whatever it was, but this was a huge moment for Ethan. And so as the week went on, you know, you get to know kids and you get to see their quirks, and so one of these days I was taking Ethan and the whole cabin, and Ethan was like, can I get a piggyback ride? I'm tired. And that's like a thing that they all ask, right? So I'm like, whatever, come on, Ethan. And I put him on my back, and I'm joking, and I'm like, man, Ethan, you got rocks in your pocket? Like, what's going on? You're heavy right now. And he goes, actually, I do have rocks in my pocket. Why is that, Ethan? I think they're cool. There are not a lot of big rocks like that around my house. And so he proceeds to show me. He literally has like handfuls of rocks in his pocket. And, you know, Ethan was the kind of kid, like, you'd take him to arts and crafts. And with at least the boys' cabins, that was like, they hated that. They were like, no, take me to the boat, right? Take me to the pool. Like, I want to do extreme sports. And Ethan just loved arts and crafts. And he not only would make one little whatever they were making, but he'd make multiple of them, right? And he'd come back with all of these things, and it'd be interesting, like, you know, he has the Walmart bag luggage, like, where is he putting these things, right? And when we would go, say, to the cafeteria for lunch, breakfast, lunch, dinner, Ethan would get, like, literally one of everything and then some, right? So he'd get all the food that they were offering, and then they always had like a cereal bar or something like that, and he'd get every single one of the kinds of cereal. And then, like, say it was lunch or dinner, they had different kinds of juice, and he'd get every kind of juice. And he'd have all of his food there right out in front of him. And one of these days, you know, we do like deep cleans of the cabins. It's something we put the kids through, I guess, like just a discipline thing. And So we're saying, all right, we're flipping the beds, we're going to wipe down everything, all that. And I go to lift up Ethan's mattress, and I see dozens of rocks and sticks. All of his crafts were up against the corner. There was like cereal, like packets that he had like pushed up to the corner as well. I was like, Ethan, why are you holding on to this stuff, man? And he said something that I will never forget. And it, you know, one of those perspective checks in life. Well, he's like, well, you know, like we don't have this stuff at home. Like, I've never seen this many cereals, and like, you know, all my crafts, like I'm going to keep them and I'm going to share them with mom and dad and this and that. And he just kind of goes on like, I'm holding on. And I said, well, why don't you like put it in your bag or something? This, you know, why under your mattress? And he said something. He's like, I am afraid that if I leave it out, it's going to like get lost, right? Or somebody's going to take it. And I was like, Ethan, you know, we could always get you more cereal. Like, we could always get you. He's like, yeah, but like, I don't know. He's like, and he's saying these things that are making me incredibly sad, but he doesn't realize it because he's so young that what he's saying is hard. And he's like, well, I just don't want it to be gone because we don't have that at home. So like, this is really exciting for me, right? And I was like, man, like, I don't know. I love that kid, man. I think about him all the time. You know, he was too young to like have a cell phone or anything like that to like try to stay in touch. So I think about him a lot. I pray about him a lot, and I hope that he's doing well. We're in the book of Exodus. What we've already talked about were the plagues. We talked about the plagues. We talked about how God orchestrated everything to get Moses where he needed to be, right? How God had a plan to save Moses before he even realized that he needed it. And today we find ourselves after the Israelites have exited Egypt, right? Like the Bible said, like God said that Egypt would beg them to leave. So they were begged to leave. And they're out now in the wilderness, and it's like they're kind of on their own, right? And we don't really have a desert here. But I don't know. I'm just imagine being stuck in I-75 traffic for 40 years, you know? It's just terrible stuff. And you start saying things and acting a certain way. It's like, man, better to die in Gainesville than to die in, you know, traffic like this. So these people, they start acting different because now they're on their own and they have to fend for themselves. And so we're going to be in chapter 16 today. And I want to just kind of go through it section by section. So chapter 16, verse 1, it says, they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which was between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month, after they had departed from the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, would that we have died by the hands of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. We need to start by acknowledging, right, that they were probably worried, right? they don't have a Publix to stop at. They don't have a Walmart to stop at. There's no Aldi's. They are in the middle of nowhere, and the food has run out. I'm just being so honest with you. I think I would probably be a little on edge too, right? There's this thing called being hangry, and hangry that just gets like gassed up like when everyone's hangry, and then suddenly we just show up to Moses like, we are hungry. Like, it's almost a normal response, but they say something that it's not even close to being true. They say, man, we should have stayed in Egypt where we had all this food and all this stuff. Like, we had everything we needed in Egypt. Come on. What are you talking about? Right? Like, this, we talked about it the first week. Like, this kind of slavery that they had in Egypt wasn't the normal sort of slavery that is talked about a lot of times in the Bible, which was just a way to pay back debts and things like that, which was kind of chill. This was the bad slavery, right? This is the slavery that's more akin to the like transatlantic slave trade, just bad, bad stuff, right? And they're saying, we want to go back to that, where we had so much food. We had everything we needed. It was so nice. And we have a tendency sometimes to do that, I think. If you've ever been growing up in your life, if you've ever had, I'll just say it like this, some sort of what we would call a toxic relationship that when you were in it, you know, you always made these excuses and whatever. When you finally got out of it, you realize like, oh man, this is, I feel great now, right? But what we do at times when we get out of situations that are bad for us and we step into what we would consider the unknown, right? Maybe you had to leave a job that was very safe for you, or maybe you had to leave a relationship that, you know, like, had a roof over your head and all of that kind of stuff, and like, it felt normal at the time or whatever, but you just come to a point where you gotta leave, and you step out into faith, and you step out into the unknown, and you begin, and we begin to look back at all, like, just the rosy, like, we romanticize what we had because we knew, right? It was familiar. We start to say things like, you know, maybe it wasn't that bad. You know, and you start to like psych yourself out and you start to say, maybe I made a mistake and I should have done, you know, they weren't all that bad to me. And, you know, there was always food and that job always paid the bills. And there was always something going on that was, you know, like I was never bored. And you start to romanticize these things and say, I should go back and maybe you made the leap because maybe your spouse asked you to or something like that. And then you turn that frustration, that whatever that weird feeling you have, you turn it on them. That's what they started doing to Moses. Moses, you brought us out here to die. We had all sorts of food and all sorts of good stuff back then. And I just imagine Moses being like, what are you talking about? We do this all the time, whether we admit it or not. Because stepping out in faith is uncomfortable. It's scary, it's unknown, and it's sometimes easier to navigate. There's a saying, it's like, it's easier to navigate the dysfunction you know than the dysfunction you don't, right? You guys ever heard that before? Because there's something, I mean, it's kind of true, right? Like, you've been steeped in that for so long, it's familiar to you. You know when to duck, right? Like, all that kind of stuff. Like, you know what it is. But to step out in faith and say, I'm going to do a new thing, and I'm going to live a new life, because I just feel that God has called me to do something, but it's scary. I mean, think about Abraham. He had all of that security. His whole family was there, generational wealth, and God says, leave. Man, I don't know, right? Like, if I had everything I could ever want, and God says to just walk away from it all, but that he's going to take care of me, it's like, man, but like, I'm kind of already taken care of. God, I don't know what to do. And so we have similar feelings, and I know that there are people here who can testify to stepping out on faith because God called them to do something, told them to do something new, and you can tell everybody, that was the scariest thing I've ever done, but thank God I did it. Because what the plans that God has for me are better than the plans I make for myself. And so it's easy to just get on the case of the Israelites when we read this. We read this from our 21st century, like, air-conditioned room and say, these people, as you eat a public sub, and say, what's wrong with them? But you got to put yourself in their shoes and understand where they're coming from, right? Doesn't make it right. We're going to get into that. Doesn't make it right, but understand that these aren't just bad people who just hate God. These are normal people with normal human emotions and needs. You need to eat, and the food has run out. And so it moves on. Verse 4, then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day that I must test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily. So Moses and Aaron said to the people of Israel, at evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against the Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us? So this is the plan. And this is always the plan in your life and their life. If you have a need, God will provide that need. He will provide for that need, right? And it might be uncomfortable because we are practical people. We see with our eyes. We're just like, there's no food. And I have never once, God, I have never once seen food fall from the sky. So is this like a euphemism? Like, God, what are you talking about? And the guy's like, no, I'm actually going to rain food down from heaven, and you guys are going to be full. And he sets up these parameters even. I'm going to give you just enough for that day. Man, sometimes we miss blessings because we don't recognize the just enough blessing, right? We've been told that, like, if God's going to pay the bills, he's going to cut you a check for $10,000. He's going to take care of everything. But sometimes the just enough blessing is that, hey, you got to live in your house another month. And that's a blessing, because there are people who didn't. There are times that you've been praying and praying, like, God, the inflation is crazy, and I need a raise. I need a new car or whatever. And you get this raise at work. They tell you you're gonna get a raise, and you're like, ooh, man, I can't wait. I'm gonna get a Mercedes. I'm gonna, all this stuff. And then the raise they give you, say your rent or your mortgage went up $500. The raise you get is exactly the amount you need. Sometimes we can say, praise God for that. But a lot of times, I think if we're being honest, we're a little disappointed. Because we expect these huge, enormous blessings, and we don't count the just enough blessings. But they are, in fact, blessings. They are, in fact, God providing for you. And it's interesting, you know, God is testing them for a multiplicity of reasons, but I honestly think one of them is, like, are they going to try to take this into their own hands, or are they going to fully rely on me? Because if they want to eat that day, they need to rely on me that day. If they try to gather a bunch of stuff, we're going to read what happens, but it just communicates you don't trust, right? So let's keep reading. Let's keep reading here, verse 8. We'll just read that. And Moses said, when the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, because the Lord has heard your grumbling, that you grumble against him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord. I just want to, we're going to not spend so much time on this. there have been moments in my life where I get into a mood. Who's been in a mood before? I'm sure raise your hands, right? Don't lie, you're in church. Where you get into a mood and it's just like nothing's ever good enough that day. And you're like, man, like you're just grumbling, and you're complaining about this and you're complaining about that. But like what we just talked about, like you ate that day, right? Like your car started that day, like everything was fine, but you're just in this mood and you wish you had more and you this and you that. I need to be humbled, because I'm not complaining about life, I'm complaining about God, right? As parents, there are parents here. Imagine, some of you have lived through this. I know I did it to my parents when I was in my moods, and I'm just complaining about this and I'm complaining about that. Like one of the things, man, now that I'm older, I totally get it. But one of the things I used to do is I went to an Adventist private school, but in Orlando, a lot of the people I went to school with were sons and daughters of like Advent Health CEOs and this and that. And so they're like, oh yes, we went to, over the summer break, we went to Prague, you know, we went to Europe and went to this. And I was like, Mom, how come we don't go on vacation? How come we, right, are still driving this old car? Mom, and I have the audacity to complain about my current situation when I did nothing to help. I did nothing to provide for any of that. My mom and my dad are working super hard, and I have the audacity to be like, I don't like it. I'm not complaining about the car. I'm not complaining about the vacations. At the end of the day, I'm complaining you have not given me enough. When I have done nothing. When I have done nothing, not a thing to help. And so Moses has the courage to look the people in the face and say, listen, you're not mad at me, you're mad at God. That's crazy. That is actually crazy, because there are times the elders of the church and myself, sometimes we can understand this, because it's like, man, like, I got a call about this and I got a call about that. It's like, I want to be like Moses and say, hey, why don't you call God? Anyway, I'm not going to do that. It's Sabbath. But it becomes, and we're going to see, that it becomes a faith issue for the people. So we're going to, this is a big chunk of text, but like, I don't want to miss anything in it. We're going to start in verse 9. So then Moses said to Aaron, say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumblings. And as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation, the people of Israel, they looked towards the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God. In the evening, quail came. They came up and covered the camp, and in the morning, dew lay on the ground. And when the dew had gone up, there was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. When the people saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, it is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord had commanded. Gather of it, each of you, as much as he can eat. You shall take an omer according to the number of the persons that each of you has in his tent. And the people of Israel did so. They gathered some more and some less. But when they measured it with an omer, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as he could eat. And Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over until the morning. But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it until the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning, they gathered it, each as much as he could eat. But when the sun grew hot, it melted. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, this is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil. And all that is left over, lay aside to be kept until the morning. So they laid it aside until the morning as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink, and there were no worms in it. Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there will be none. On the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath, therefore, on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each of you in this place. Let no one of you go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. Whew. There's a lot in there. There is, like I said, this idea of, I guess I'm just calling it the just enough blessing. God is asking the people, if you trust me, I will feed you. But there is this, I don't know, like psychological phenomenon. I don't exactly know what the word of it is. I tried Googling it, but like, it was kind of weird Googling this whole thing, trying to be like, what is it called when a person, and it's like, the thing is like this long. I didn't get any hits, but I've seen it, right? I saw it, in Ethan. There is a phenomena, like a thing that happens without even realizing it, when you go from not having much to suddenly having enough. There is a tendency on the worst end of that spectrum, on the very worst end of that spectrum, there's a tendency to become what we would call like a hoarder, right? You never let anything go. You keep for yourself, right? You always, it's like, man, like, you know, we can go buy more shampoo. It's like, no. I bought 50 of them. Like, what? Why? Because you don't know what will happen. And that's the logic behind people. Because they've lived a life where they realize how easily things can be taken away, they hold on to, right? On the best end of that spectrum, you just are responsible, right, and frugal. But depending on where you fall, you can fall into a place that becomes unhealthy. And the people of Israel are unhealthy. God has very clearly stated, he even shows up and they saw the glory of God, and he has communicated to them, if you take just enough for that day, I will protect you, right? I will feed you, you'll be okay. What do they do? There is a fear being out in the wilderness where there is no food. They begin to take more and hold on to it and keep it for themselves. Now, you could just say, well, that means the food goes bad. But the reason the food goes bad, because you notice that on Friday and Sabbath, it sticks around. The reason it goes bad is because God is saying to them, why don't you trust me? Why don't you trust me? I'm trying to help you. I'm doing this for you. And you are communicating to me that you don't believe me. It becomes, at some point, right? Like, we all have these human emotions. We all have these human fears. We do. But at some point in our walk, we need to be just hit with the truth that at some point, it becomes a faith issue. At some point, it does. Because we communicate to God, I just don't know if you're actually going to care for me the way that you say you will. And the issue when things become a faith issue is that faith issues inevitably become salvation issues. Now, I'm not here to scare you today, because God is not a God, and I need to make this super clear. Right? Super clear. God is not a God who will take his hand away from you because he is bothered by you or annoyed by you. Right? Like, he definitely communicates, like, to Moses, like, why are the people not trusting me? But his hand's still out, right? He's still providing manna every single day. The hand is there. But a faith issue becomes a salvation issue because of us. Not because God chooses to be annoyed with you to the point where he says, forget you. It becomes a faith issue and a salvation issue for us personally, because when God says, leap, I will catch you, we get scared and end up not jumping at all. You understand what I'm saying? It's not God who turns away from us. Romans 8 makes that clear. There is nothing on the planet, in the universe, that can make God stop loving you. Not a thing. Not a thing. No matter what you've done, no matter what you've said, no matter what you've drank, no matter what you've ingested or shot into your veins, or it does not matter, because God will not stop loving you. But faith issues turn into salvation issues, because when it's time for us to take the leap and have him catch us, we don't jump. They're going to be in the desert for a while, right? Like, God is like, we got to get this right now because this is going to be a long couple of years, right? We realize later that they weren't even supposed to be in the desert as long as they were. Why? Because of faith. It became faith issue. All the time they started to grumble and say, ah, no, like, it's not going to happen. And when God showed them the promised land and it says, it's time for you to jump, what did they do? They saw how big the people were. They said in their mind, there's no way we're going to win this fight. And they did not jump. And so an entire generation of people died in the wilderness when they could have had the promised land if they had jumped when God said jump. You see, the promised land was there for them. It was not God who didn't provide it for them. It was them who decided, we're not jumping. You understand how this salvation issue works. I'm saying it over and over again because I do not want anyone to walk away from here scared of God. God loves you. He adores you. He's calling out to you daily. It becomes a faith issue. And a faith issue becomes a salvation issue. Something else that was hard for the people to grasp was the Sabbath, right? This idea of rest, because they were slaves and they weren't allowed to rest. No days off, no sick days, no PTO. You go to work. So if you want to eat, if you want to survive, you work for it, right? That's the mentality. And I think there are places in our walk that we begin to say, if I don't work for it, I don't get the blessing. And like I've said this before, the Sabbath is one of the most theologically dense, like, topics that could ever be brought up in the Bible. Like, there's so much in there. God is saying, I'm going to provide for you. Take a break. Relax. The Sabbath, New Living Translation says it best, I think, in verse 30 or verse 29. It says, my version here says, see, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. The New Living Translation says it like this. It says, the Sabbath was God's gift to you. Imagine taking a gift and being like, meh. Right? Like just throwing it over to the side. Like, I don't want it. I'm going to do what I want to do anyway. Like somebody say, hey, I'm giving you a day off. And you're like, nah, I'm going to go to work anyway. Why? Why would you do that? Right? Because we don't trust. We don't trust the gift, the simplicity of the gift. God is not hard. He's not this far off creature we got to go through all these hoops and hurdles to get to. He is easy to understand. And the Sabbath was given to the people as a gift. It's a gift for us today. I mean, the idea that people just go and go and go and go and feel they got to work and work and work and work to either live a good life and have, in some circles, to have salvation is exhausting, and it's anti-Sabbath. It's anti the good news of Jesus, which says rest. We do not subscribe to a salvation by works mentality. We don't. It is only by the grace of Jesus Christ and Him crucified that we have salvation. The Sabbath is a gift. That salvation is a gift too. And so when Jesus says jump, I encourage you to jump because He's going to catch you. Verse 31, and we're coming to the end here. Verse 31. Now, the house of Israel called its name, and that we're talking about the flakes of manna. It says, now the house of Israel called its name manna, and manna literally means what is it, which is funny. It was like a coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. Moses said, this is what the Lord has commanded. Let an omer of it be kept throughout your generation so that you may see the bread with which I fed you in the wilderness when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. And Moses said to Aaron, take a jar and put an omer of manna in it and place it before the Lord to be kept throughout your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron placed it before the testimony to be kept. And ultimately, it ends up in the Ark of the Covenant. There's a theological principle in this that it wasn't this arbitrary, like, just keep some. There's a theological principle that we need to take from this. And I want you to leave today with this very practical, I think it's a practical thing, because I'm going to give you homework. there are going to be times, right, when the food has, you know, the water has dried up, the food is gone, so to speak, right? The money has, you know, it's been spent. And you were going to find yourself where at one point you were just soaring with God. And you were just like, man, these blessings on blessings on blessings, it's all over the place. And I'm feeling great. But someday, at some point, you are going to find yourself in a hard time. And God instructs the people, I want you to save some manna so that when you go through hard times, you can go back, pick it up, look at it, and remember, when I was down and out, God provided. There's a theological principle to this that I think we all need, and this is the homework. I want you to go home today. Maybe you're already thinking of it right now. I want you to go back As you're taking the rest of your Sabbath, and I want you to think back. I want you to write it down. Put it somewhere. Frame it. Whatever you need to do. Put it up in your bathroom mirror so that you see it every morning. And remember, go back through and remember all of the good times, the times that you didn't know what you were going to do and God provided. I want you to think about them. We forget them. We forget them because when things are going crazy, that's all we focus on. But when things are going crazy, you need to look back because history informs the future, right? And so as you're going through crazy stuff and you look back and you say, man, when my car was about to be repoed, a payment came in. I don't know where it came from, but I know that it had to be God because I was praying about it all the time, right? When you start to say, man, like my children were kind of just out there. And I missed them, and I wanted them to come home, and then suddenly they called me that day, and they said, hey, Mom, Dad, like, I'm trying to go back to church. Like, I'm trying to understand God, and you write that down. Write it down, and remember that God made a way. When you're thinking to yourself in your own life, like, man, like, I feel like I haven't felt the power of God since the day I decided to be baptized. Write that down. Where Ben and Omar, write it down. Today, write it down. Because at some point, stuff's going to happen. Right? That's what we talked about, I think, the first week, that stuff happens. But when that stuff happens, I want you to look back and remember the goodness of God in your life. And you're, number one, you're going to feel better, right? And number two, you're going to be saying to yourself, I know either the huge blessing or the just enough blessing is on its way, and I'm going to be okay. Because God has made a way. You see, God provided for them bread. And then in the next chapter, he provides water, right? They get fed, and then they're thirsty, like we all are. And so then they need water. They start saying the same stuff. You brought us out here to die, Moses. And God says, hey, you see that rock? I want you to hit that rock, and from it, water's going to come, right? Jesus is the bread of life, right? Holy Spirit is the water of life, right? Like, Christ is that rock. And for us to find that salvation, right, for us to have life, the rock had to be struck, right? The bread, the body had to be broken so that we could live. And that is why throughout the Old Testament, it starts showing itself up throughout Exodus that God is mentioned, his name, Jehovah Jireh, like God provides, right? Because he does. He did back then, and he still does. Because we might be wondering, what's the blessing now? What's the blessing today? How am I going to make it through another week? How am I going to go another year? It's like, well, you have been blessed. Jesus is the blessing, right? Jesus is the gift. He is our hope, and Jesus is our future. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you so much for providing in our lives. God, I ask that you just, Jesus, in my own life, call me out. Call me out. Where am I lacking in faith, God? God, I pray for my church family here that whatever the faith challenges are, God, that you would remind them, that we'd be able to look back and remember how you have provided, how you have taken care of, that we might have the faith to take a step forward when we feel like we can't do it. Jesus, bless these people here today under the sound of my voice, those watching online, those on the podcast. God, bless them that they may know without a shadow of doubt that it was you who made a way. God, we look forward to the day we get to look you in the face, look you directly in the eyes, and just know, like, it's great now. Everything is good now. The blessing is right here in front of me. God, we look forward to that day. In your name, amen.